Good morning. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel, and today we're going to talk about whether New Mexico should or should not expand its Medicaid program. It is an insurance program that is subsidized by the federal government, and it serves low-income people in New Mexico, specifically right now low-income children, the elderly. Some low-income adults are served by another state program, and also low-income disabled folks served by the program provided with insurance for medical care. And we'd like to take your calls this morning. What do you think? Should New Mexico expand? This expansion is something that is mandated under the Affordable Care Act. And when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the Affordable Care Act was constitutional, the court also ruled that the federal government cannot force individual states to implement this expansion by threatening to remove the funding that the federal government is already providing for states. Right now in New Mexico, current Medicaid recipients, every $1 that the state spends for current recipients, the federal government provides four additional dollars. That's the matching rate. So we'd like to hear whether you want to see this program expanded to include about 170,000 additional low-income adults. The number to call locally here is 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can send an email to callinshow@kunm.org. You can also post your comments online. Joining us to discuss this morning, Dr. Dean Waldman. He's a physician. He's also with the Rio Grande Foundation. And Bill Jordan. He is with New Mexico Voices for Children. Thanks to you both for joining me this morning.
Good to be here. Thanks.
Did I make any mistakes in my kind of presentation of this topic this morning or in the feature report that I produced and aired earlier this morning?
Not at all.
Well, that's good to know. Yay. So I want to start off then. Bill, let's start with you. Can you perhaps set up a little bit about what Medicaid is in New Mexico right now, the size of the program, how many people are served, and then what an expansion would mean for those numbers?
Okay. Sure. The Medicaid program currently serves a little over 300,000 low-income children by virtue of their family's income. They are made eligible for health care. And then it also serves a number of what are called waiver programs for the developmentally disabled, elderly disabled, nursing home care for seniors and disabled. And together, it's well over 400,000 individuals who are served with healthcare, and in the case of the disabled, a lot of support services. So the program is very important to New Mexico. It's covering almost 25% of our population. And as you said, the federal government pays the lion's share of the cost, about a little better than three quarters of the cost overall. And in the expansion, what would happen is that low-income adults would become eligible.
And what level of income are we talking about?
Well,
here?
We're talking about 138% of the federal poverty level. So, you know, that's a little over the minimum wage. So it's pretty low income. Anybody above that level would be eligible to get insurance through the new healthcare exchange and get a share of that paid by the federal government through a subsidy. But for the lower income group, it's 100% paid under Medicaid. And for the first 3 years, the federal government's going to pay all of that. And then over the next couple of years, it phases down until the seventh year. We finally get to where the federal government will pay 90% of the cost and the state only has to pick up 10% of the cost.
Dr. Waldman, the portion of the New Mexico General Fund that goes to paying for Medicaid, I believe it's 16% this fiscal year. Can you talk a little bit about the impact that this program has on the healthcare industry in New Mexico from your perspective?
Actually, if I may alter the question just slightly, I'd rather take what Bill said and take
sure.
it to the other end of the spectrum, which is the physician trying to care for the patient, because what we really want is not coverage. What we want is care for in my case, children. Bill is for Voices for Children. I literally take care of children. And every day, those of us who try to care for the children of New Mexico, especially the sick ones, I'm a cardiologist, have to fight against the Medicaid system because the way it's structured, the people who actually have the money, the insurance companies, want not to spend it. And so their means of controlling their costs and making profit is by denying, delaying, or deferring the care that we want to provide the children. So my problem, and I've been saying this for a while about the Medicaid expansion, is of course we want care for children, but most of this money is going to bureaucracy and to new regulators and new administrators and new oversight officers and directors and agencies, but it's not a single new doctor or nurse in this system. Now, if we add 170,000, we have, I'll be kind and say, trouble trying to care for the children and other people who are qualified under Medicaid right now. Throwing another 170,000 in to the same number of respiratory therapists and doctors and nurses and so forth is just as crazy as the whole ACA about 30 million more insured Americans and no doctors to care for them.
We're talking about whether New Mexico should expand its Medicaid program, providing health insurance coverage, federal and state funded health insurance coverage for low-income adults, to expand and include low-income adults. That 170,000 number is an estimate based on the number of low-income adults that are in New Mexico and this idea that not everyone would apply for Medicaid coverage under an expansion. So that 170,000 number is this estimate of how many people would actually apply for coverage if the expansion were implemented, right?
And that's you're absolutely right. And the big not the a big problem is the issue of not eligibility, although that is a separate issue, we can all agree on that, but is why don't people sign up? The GAO report 2010 on uninsured Americans,
that's the Government Accountability Office,
showed that 24% of the uninsured population of our entire nation already qualified for various programs, Medicaid being one of them, and didn't sign up. And the question is not, do we have money? That's another whole question. But why do people choose not to sign up?
Well, New Mexico has been struggling with its Medicaid program for a while, in the sense of the governor's office announced earlier this year an overhaul plan for the existing program. And this conversation about how to make sure that the state's Medicaid program is run efficiently and that as many people who are eligible are actually enrolled in the program, and there have been efforts by the Human Services Department to increase enrollment or to kind of slow down enrollment depending on the availability of funds for the program in the state's general fund. Bill Jordan, talk to me a little bit about how Medicaid is now and how you see an expansion helping the system as opposed to potentially hurting it, as Dr. Waldman has described.
Well, clearly Medicaid is an important part of the healthcare system in New Mexico. It already provides a lot of care, particularly in poor rural areas of the state, where if the program wasn't there and wasn't robust, then the healthcare infrastructure in those small communities would just collapse. So both Medicare and Medicaid provide a tremendous amount of healthcare support and infrastructure that then makes it possible for a lot of the rest of us with private insurance to access that care. There are many hospitals in New Mexico that have 70% of their costs covered by Medicaid. So it's an essential part of the mix of healthcare. I'd like to just say that, Dr. Waldman talked about what we really want is health care, not necessarily insurance coverage. And I'm no fan of insurance companies. But I will say that one of the important things that the Affordable Care Act did is that it requires insurance companies now to pay 80 to 85% of their funds for actual medical care. So they can't spend any more than 15 or 20% on overhead, administration, bureaucracy. And so we're going to see a lot more care delivered, or in the case of this last year, we're going to see people actually get a refund on their insurance policies.
Well, so here's a question. We're talking about, you're talking about private insurance and some limitations that are placed on private insurance agencies by the Affordable Care Act. But when we're talking about Medicaid, we're talking about a federally subsidized program that is run by the states. And so does that 85% for care requirement also restrict the administration of the Medicaid program in New Mexico, for example?
Yes, in New Mexico, it's already restricted. Governor Richardson passed legislation that required actually 85% of the funds to be spent on care. And I will say that Medicaid, as a where it is administered in the government, it, the government really funds it and provides some oversight. But the care and the insurance coverage is provided in the private insurance market. So the children currently and the low-income adults in the next few years will have a choice of Presbyterian, Loveless, Blue Cross, Molina, just like they would if they were buying insurance on the private market. And the state's portion of the oversight and the bureaucracy of that program is incredibly small. It's less than 3%. Of the cost. So it's a very efficient way of providing care. It's not government care. It's care provided in the private insurance market with government funding.
Dean Waldman, you're shaking your head.
Yeah, the fact is that respectfully, I must disagree. The 10,000 new jobs people are talking about or more, they're all bureaucrats. They're all people who use red tape. There are all people who oversee. There are people who manage. They're not people who will be there to give care. On the one hand, you have a mandate or a law that says you're supposed to spend up to 85%, no less than 85%, the federal government says, on care, yet the Medicare reimbursement rate that we, the doctors, are seeing is not only incredibly low, but is going down and down and down. So between these billions of dollars that are coming into the state and the state is spending both, between there and where the rubber meets the road, which is the pediatrician or in this state especially the dentist, to care for a child for maintaining his
dental care is one of the things that brings people to the emergency room.
Absolutely. I
often.
Mean, we don't, you know, the public doesn't pay attention to me, two things that are, as a pediatrician, obesity and dental care are huge problems in this state specifically. And there's no money to do what we know we should be doing for these obese children that are going to be huge burdens on the healthcare system, or these children are literally not going to have teeth to eat.
Let's take a few calls. Let's go to Jenny in Peralta. Good morning, Jenny. You're on the air.
Hi. This is Jenny. I was just calling to say that I don't think it should even be up for debate. I think, of course, we should provide health care for the citizens of our state, and I feel this is the primary difference between Democrats and Republicans. Democrats want to care for the people of this country. Republicans want to take from them to line their pockets. And if you, I have uninsured former students who had a viral infection, spent one night in the hospital, the most responsible citizen you could ever want, and now she's burdened by like $3,000 in debt. So it's just, to me, it's a non-issue. Until we provide care for the citizens of our country so they can have quality of life and not have to be burdened by these insane bills, then we are not going to advance as a populace.
I'd like to both agree with the caller, but also say, meanwhile, we are spending 40% of all our health care dollars, that's over $1 trillion a year, not on health care.
And you're talking nationally, right?
Nationally. The health care system, the bureaucracy, the regulatory burden consumes 40% of all the dollars that go into that system.
And yet at the same time, you hear, I mean, I've heard from physicians that the time that it takes to, say, have an extended discussion about a condition with a patient or to discuss a medication in the detail that is often required is time that, sometimes isn't paid for under the current system that we have. And so you do have this need in the system for the kind of management of healthcare that some of these programs are at least purportedly attempting to fill in, right?
You're identifying, in my mind, possibly the key problem with the entire U.S. healthcare system. We don't pay for the outcome we want. The outcome we want from the system is not saving money. The outcome we want from the system is not coverage. The outcome we want is the health and longevity, long life, of our citizens and our Americans. By the way, we haven't discussed, and the whole Medicaid expansion is very contradictory, inconsistent on the issue of illegals, but that's a whole separate issue. Nonetheless, what we want, what we should reward, what we should pay for is long-lived, healthy people.
Let's go to another call. Lisa in Albuquerque. Good morning, Lisa. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Earlier, one of the gentlemen there said they don't understand why people don't apply for Medicaid and who are eligible. And as a person who's been in that situation, you know, I can tell you that, quite frankly, when you're not making enough money, it's really hard to take a day off work in order to go and hang out at the welfare office on the off chance that you might qualify for health care. Usually you only apply for such a thing or get such a thing when you're actually sick and you're at the doctor's and somebody sort of pushes the issue, you've got to go get this so you can pay. And, you know, until that time happens, we just don't go to the doctor and we don't go to the welfare office either because we can't afford to take that day off work.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Jordan.
Well, I would just say, that I think we certainly hear that a lot, mm-hmm. that it is difficult to get enrolled. The requirements that the state makes of people to prove income eligibility are beyond what the federal government requires. And we have long been asking the state to simplify the enrollment process. That should happen to an extent when we get to 2014 and the state is required to bring new enrollees into the system through the exchange. So that will streamline. I do want to point out that the last couple of years, the governor has completely zeroed out outreach funding. So,
well, and this is one of the ways that cost of a program like this is controlled is by making the application process a little more less accessible, and also by stopping that outreach process.
That self-defeating?
Well, right. That's the question. Is like if you're worried about the cost of a program, and so you're like, okay, we need to make sure that we don't get everybody onto this program because each additional member is going to cost the program more money. It is this contradiction in values, in a sense.
That's what I was trying to get at earlier, which is we have to stop saying the whole purpose of the system is to save money. That's not the purpose at all. We want to spend money to make people well and to keep people well.
So the question that the governor right now is considering is whether to have New Mexico expand this program or not. I did request to speak with members of Susana Martinez's administration, both for the feature story that I produced. It aired earlier this morning. If you missed it, it is posted on our website, KUNM.org. Just to repeat, a Human Services Department spokesman did say in a written response, quote, "We must weigh all of the considerations at hand, including how we best provide services to those most in need. There are still many questions that need to be answered by the federal government before any final decision can be made," end quote. That from the spokesman with the Human Services Department on how Governor Susana Martinez's administration has not yet decided to implement this Medicaid expansion yet. We're going to take a quick break right now, and our lines are full. So as soon as you hear someone ask a question online, and then you should have a chance to call in. The number locally is 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. We're speaking with Dean Waldman with the Rio Grande Foundation and Bill Jordan with New Mexico Voices for Children on whether New Mexico should expand its Medicaid program to include about 170,000 low-income adults. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. This is the KUNM Collins Show. We'll be right back.
Established in 1929, UNM Press is a well-known and respected publisher in the fields of anthropology, archaeology, indigenous studies, Latin American history, American studies, Chicana and Chicano studies, art and architecture, and the history, literature, ecology, and cultures of the American West. For more information, please visit unmpress.com. A message from the tax-exempt University of New Mexico Press.
Support for KUNM comes from the not-for-profit New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where members earn rewards for their relationship, checking, credit cards, auto loans, and mortgages. Details and calculator on member rewards at nmefcu.org.
This is the KUNM Collins Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel, and we're taking your calls this morning on whether New Mexico should expand its Medicaid program. And let's do go to the calls now. Demetrius in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. I am a pediatric dentist here in New Mexico. I'm with Community Dental Services, which provides health care for the low-income population and for the Medicaid population. I've been treating these children for 20 years here in New Mexico, and I agree with the previous comments made that the two most pressing needs for children are the childhood obesity and the need for dental care. The dental care that is needed is, it's basically virtually overwhelming, the needs for these children. And so much could be prevented with just regular dental care instead of having these children go to the emergency room with abscesses and temperatures that now require medical care and heavy antibiotics to get the child out of trouble. It is absolutely incredible to me that our governor is stalling on the acceptance of this expansion when the federal government will cover the first 3 years at 100% of the expansion costs. Now, we look to the wonderful leadership of the governors of Wisconsin, Louisiana, Florida, and Texas, who have refused to accept this program for their needy patients, especially in the light of Texas, which has the lowest record in providing health care for the poor in our country, and we're just one step above it. We need this desperately, and this is not just for expansion for the adults. This will also be for the children, and the children need it desperately here in New Mexico.
I don't think Bill or I could possibly agree about that more 100%. The question that Governor Martinez has to answer is not, do we want care for our children? Do we want dental care and obesity prevention and therapy programs? The question she has to answer is, can we work it so that money will go to people, to patients, to children, to you, to me, to care for kids with heart problems. That's not as simple an answer as you would like it to be. You'd like to say, God, all those billions coming in here, what I could do with that money for the children. But the question is, will it end up going to you for their dental care to recruit more dentists into this state? Well, you can't recruit dentists if you can't pay them.
Bill Jordan.
Well, you know, the federal law was called the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. And one of the patient protections is that 85% of the dollars actually have to go to care. So that's a real improvement in the way healthcare is delivered now.
So you're taking issue with Dr. Waldman's claim that there would be more bureaucracy and less care with the Medicaid funding for New Mexico?
Yes, certainly. Because one of the requirements is that the money, the majority of the money has to be used for care. That's a change in the law, and that's an improvement in the law. And with regard to the caller talking about the need for prevention, I couldn't agree more. And that's especially true for children. We really need comprehensive developmental care for our kids. And one of the other wonderful things about the Affordable Care Act is that preventive care is now provided without copays. So I just had my every other year colonoscopy, and for the first time, I didn't
every
have
every other year. Oh, Bill!
And I every few years.
I'm sorry, guys.
And so, you know, I for the first time didn't have a copay of hundreds of dollars, and for a lot of families, it makes a difference whether they go to the doctor or not, or whether they take their children to the doctor or not, if they can afford that copay.
Well, and the providers that I spoke with up in Espanola at the Rio Ripa County Health Commons, their comments were very much focused around this idea that folks who are uninsured and are low income, but who maybe don't qualify for Medicaid at this point in time, some of this kind of adult segment that we're talking about, are waiting to seek out care until their healthcare problems are much more severe than they would be if they had this kind of support from the state through the Medicaid program, that they would be able to get the preventative care instead of waiting until things were more severe. We heard the mention of children with dental problems. And I think that that question of preventative care is central to this conversation, right?
When you're paying a primary doctor a very small fraction, I mean, the law may say
primary care doctors shut down their clinics because they
can't afford of the reimbursement schedule that Medicare or Medicaid pays them. So I'm still stuck with this issue: how much of that money is actually going to translate to care for children? And just because the federal government says 85% should, all we've seen in those who care for children is a constant reduction in the reimbursement schedule.
Let's take a few more calls. Javier in Albuquerque. Good morning, Javier. You're on the air.
Good morning, and thanks for covering this topic, Elaine. I'm looking at a book review here about Dr. Dean Waldman's book, and it talks about his belief that death panels are actually a part of the Affordable Care Act. And I'd like to ask for his and Mr. Jordan's perspective on Governor Susana Martinez being a death panel of one who's holding the fate of hundreds of thousands of New Mexicans who can't afford health insurance and who are looking to her to put the Medicaid opportunity in New Mexico over scoring political points.
I'd be glad to answer that. I regret to say it pains me beyond words that the Affordable Care Act, which was disingenuously called Patient Protection, actually has in it the Independent Payment Advisory Board, IPAB, which literally will say this is the care you can give Dr. Waldman, this is the care you can give a patient, and this is the care that is not available to you, even though it's technically possible. So they're saying just the way they do in Great Britain. If you're over 55 years of age and you need kidney dialysis, I'm sorry, too bad, but IPAB doesn't approve it, and we are therefore a death panel, and you can go and die.
Bill Jordan.
Well, you know, PolitiFact, one of the fact-checking groups, calls death panels the lie of the year. And I don't know many people that believe that other than Sarah Palin, who still seems to believe in death panels. What the Affordable Care Act does do is rein in the insurance companies who currently deny care and are allowed to deny care or drop your coverage. And so the patient protection part of the law comes into play by requiring insurance companies to not deny care and to not provide lifetime limits on care. And so there are a lot of patient protections built into this law. There are not death panels. And I would agree with Javier that, unfortunately, what the Supreme Court did was say that now if governors have the power to deny care to millions of Americans who under federal law are eligible for that care, they've essentially created 50 death panels of one who now have within their power the ability to deny care. And in New Mexico, to as many as 170,000 low-income adults.
Let's take another call. Ali in Albuquerque. Good morning, Ali. Or maybe it's Allie.
Either way you want to pronounce it. Thank you, Elaine. Hi. Yes, it's me. I am a victim of the Medicaid program in New Mexico. And I'm not the only one, particularly those of us who are disabled, is the label that we have, disabled, and low income, I guess. Those of us who have had traumatic brain injuries are mentally vulnerable, I should say, to a government system that applies bureaucracy and effectively deceives people about promises that are made. As far as patient protection being fit into the how things are now, I don't believe it. I actually am one of a few hundred people who ended up taking into legal activities against the state human health and human services department for addressing basically deception and the penalty or the damage that was done to me over thousands of dollars in debt that I was put into as a result of a program that was a Medicaid program that was directed towards people with TBI, which I wouldn't have gone into if I had not been deceived and advertised in the first place. And so the whole prospect of trying to bring more American citizens in this state, New Mexico, to invite them into this program, to enroll, and to provide enough funding to the program, just enough to advertise and bring more people into the program, rather than directing money to provide, as the doctor is saying, the funds to come through with their promises that have already been made. Where is honesty in the program that is now ought to be worked on before trying to expand it?
Thanks, Ali. Let's go to Shannon in Albuquerque. Good morning, Shannon. You're on the air.
Consistently, the legislature has failed to approve increases in physician reimbursement. And it goes with the legislative myth that doctors are well paid. If you look at the categories under which a doctor can provide care, the documentation has to be extreme for that doctor to get enhanced compensation for the advice they give. We also are putting doctors under the stress of having to upgrade their software with about $30,000 of an investment to be able to put their medical records online. Doctors are now retiring. Doctors are choosing to go into private care only. The opportunity for a senior to get an appointment in Medicare is diminishing extremely fast, and the long wait that people have to go through because doctors are having to juggle their patients to increase the number of private insured patients that they can take or self-paid in patients versus people who are receiving government compensation is extraordinarily abusive. And the problem is when you increase coverage, it's like a balloon. You then have to restrict access somewhere in order to make this work. Governor Richardson solved the problem in his mind by requiring Medicaid recipients to go through multiple qualifications to have access to the system. And so he made people come back four times in a year to get coverage and qualify as a recipient. The problem we have is that doctors now cannot make ends meet. They have to bring in extra people to handle the paperwork. It's a nightmare that we can we might just make even worse when we include another 10,000 patients in New Mexico, if not more. And then the first thing a doctor has to do is give them physicals. And what's the long wait going to be when all those patients enter the system? And now you suddenly say, oh, we need to see you, but we can't see you for 3 months. So I would be interested in hearing a response on that score.
Dr. Waldman.
I did a it pains me to agree with the caller, because it's true. I did a study, study analysis on our department about 2 years ago, and for every 30 minutes I am allotted to spend with a patient, 7 of those minutes are consumed with, I can't say the word on the air, so let's say BS or red tape or bureaucracy or whatever word you want to use. And so now you're saying, wait a minute, 25% effectively of the time that I'd like to spend with the patient, I'd like to think about what the diagnosis is or talk to the mother, is consumed by the system, which I would classify as non-productive time. And so what am I supposed to do?
Remind us what organization you work for as a pediatric.
The University of New Mexico.
Bill Jordan, your comments.
Well, I think another of the benefits of the Affordable Care Act is that reimbursements are increased for primary care physicians, primary care delivery. There was a recognition on the part of the federal government that a lot of physicians are in specialty care, that not as many med students choose primary care because, frankly, it doesn't pay as well. And so we need primary care physicians, and we need a lot more of them if we are going to cover more people. And so not only was a lot of money put toward infrastructure, primary care clinics, expansion of training for providers, but reimbursements for primary care physicians was also increased. So there's an effort, I think, in the legislation to address many of these. It's not a perfect piece of legislation. It's one that's probably going to have to be fine-tuned over time. But, you know, there haven't been any other solutions on the table. And I know there are those who want to repeal and replace, and I know there are those who want to repeal and not replace. But we now have a law that's been upheld by the Supreme Court. And I think we need to give it a chance to work, and I think we need to all work together in New Mexico to make sure that it becomes a smart solution for our state. It has the potential to provide really good coverage for our people and give us not only a healthier New Mexico, but a healthier economy.
Let's take another call. Terry in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air, Terry.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. This is such a complicated topic. It's very hard. I've been taking notes, and now I'm looking at three big Post-its full of questions. I work as a nurse, and in my life, I organize my appointments. I get reminders from the dentist and from the doctors, and I can ask off for time. And you have to be really organized to even take care of your health, in addition to having the time to exercise and do the things that help you maintain your health. I think it's a no-brainer about whether we should have the increase in funding and to help take care of everybody in this state or everybody in the United States. Health, quality of life, preventative medicine is paramount, and the cost down the road. I mean, if we're not taking care of people and trying to tell them how to take care of themselves, I don't know what we're going to do. And as a country, we need to take care of each other. It feels really important. I support the Affordable Care Act. I support single payer. I support simplifying this system. I don't know how insurance companies have come to rule the United States and the cost of health care. I think more than about the funding that we want to get and we deserve to get and better get, it's about why does it cost so much? Why can't we take care of each other and do it in a more simple manner?
Thanks for your call, Terry. We're talking about whether New Mexico should expand its Medicaid program. This is a federally subsidized health insurance program that is run by individual states. The Affordable Care Act mandates that states expand the program to include, at least in New Mexico, it would mean about 170,000 low-income adults would become eligible for Medicaid coverage. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the federal government cannot force states to implement this expansion by threatening to withhold the funding that the federal government already provides to states for existing and eligible Medicaid recipients. In New Mexico, the federal government spends about $4 for every $1 that the state spends on about a quarter of the population that is enrolled right now in New Mexico. We're hearing from Dean Waldman. He is a physician, and he's also with the Rio Grande Foundation, and Bill Jordan with New Mexico Voices for Children. If you'd like to participate in this conversation, pose a question or comment to these two gentlemen, you can call 277-5866. That's the local number here in Albuquerque. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. And let's go back to the phones. Michelle in Albuquerque, you're on the air. Hello, Michelle. Are you still with us?
Hi, yes, I'm here.
You're on the air. I think we might have just lost Michelle. Let's get her back on the line in a moment. But first, we'll go to Glenn in Hemis Springs. Good morning, Glenn. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks so much for this. I was a chaplain in St. Joe's at the old St. Joe's Hospital back in the 80s. And at that time, doctor friends were telling me average salary of doctors in Albuquerque was around $400,000 a year. I'm sure it's gone up. So far, we haven't talked about how much doctors do earn. We haven't spoken about those unethical doctors who've ripped off Medicare, Medicaid. That's part of the mix. I had a mother who died a year ago who was on Medicaid, and thank God she was. She had worked till she was 70. She was getting $1,900-plus a year for Social Security, which she turned over to the system in exchange for the system taking care of her. I want to speak up for the elderly who have difficulty in this poorest of the states to go through all of the hoops to get what they deserve. And I guess my prayer list includes Governor Susana Martinez, that she would care about people, care about the elderly, care about those who do need nursing home care. And I also would pray that doctors would start having a sense of servanthood, ethical stances when it comes to charging appropriately. And of course, as the nurse just said, we have a system that really favors health care folks. I happen to know somebody up here who works for the federal government who does not have health care insurance. This person has to pay around $500 a month out of pocket. And so I was just corrected, $620 some. So please, Governor Martinez, consider the folks who are at the lower end of the income. Thanks so much for your program.
Let's take another call. Cynthia in Bosque Farms. Good morning, Cynthia. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning. I'll make it very brief. Good morning, everyone there. I just wanted to make a comment and then ask a quick question. I am a registered nurse, and to hear Dr. Waldman is very refreshing. I myself believe that there's just a lot of red tape with care. I used to work for the state, and I won't go much into that, but had to work with a lot of case managers and so forth, and constantly hearing a lot of no's. So what I'd like to know, as a nurse and someone very interested in people's health and helping them getting over the barriers, healthy families, making a better New Mexico, where can a person like me, a nurse that doesn't have very much power, get involved in a movement to try to fix the system? I believe the Affordable Care Act has a lot of merit, but as long as we have a system where it's a run as a business, and where they're trying to move away from unnecessary services and things like that, I think it's a lot of rhetoric. Where is there somewhere that I could get involved, or people like myself could educate ourselves more and really become part of changing these bureaucracies?
Dean Waldman.
Yeah, I couldn't. This young lady is not a plant for what I'm about to say, but let me answer your question. The book, first book I wrote called Uproot U.S. Healthcare, was literally what you as a nurse or I as a doctor would do with a sick patient, only I did it for the healthcare system. I said, what is the cause of the problems in the healthcare system, or the multiple causes? Not the symptoms, not the signs. What are the reasons why the system is broken? And then we can begin to try and fix those causes, not treat the symptoms or palliate the patient, which we all know is the wrong thing to do. So in answer to the young lady's question, I want people to become empowered and look at the system and understand why this system is so broken. And instead of simply putting more Band-Aids on it, we need to fix the system, that is, change the system. And it is in our power as voters.
Bill Jordan.
Well, I would encourage everybody who wants the system to work better for the people to contact the governor's office, contact their legislators, and ask them to cut the red tape.
Amen.
We've talked a lot about all of the documentation that people need to provide in order to prove income eligibility, clearly, the state is requiring much more than they need to require. And frankly, they're pretty upfront and honest about the reason for that. They want to keep the enrollment numbers at a level where it doesn't cost the state so much money.
But isn't that catch 22?
I think that's terribly unfortunate that they would use administrative means like that to intentionally hold down enrollment.
Right.
And hopefully some of that will change with the new law. And when the exchange comes into place, there'll be new requirements about simplification.
Let's take another call. Michelle in Albuquerque, I think we got you back. And I just wanted to ask if you can keep your comment brief. We're coming up on the end of the show. But go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking the call. And I wanted to address how Dr. Waldman keeps saying he's stuck on this idea that we want to put more money on care and not coverage and all the overhead. And I think he is stuck on that. I would agree with that. And that what we require is that Dr. Waldman and the administration have strict oversight of the insurance companies. And speaking of the loan reimbursement rates that he's talking about, that's another factor that we've got to take into account in all the negotiations that the state will have with the insurance companies. The private insurance companies are the best at doing that. So everything Dr. Waldman has said this morning is the best argument for single payer. Affordable Care Act is the only thing better, or the only thing close to a single payer act that we've got. So I would agree that we've got to spend the money on the kids and on the patients and invest in primary care.
Dr. Waldman, just to be clear, you're not a member of Susana Martinez's administration.
I am not.
I just wanted to clarify that in case that her comment was could have been misinterpreted, I think. Let's take one last call, and then I'll get final comments from each of you. Gladys in Taos, good morning. You're on the air.
Yeah, my name is Gladys.
Gladys, pardon. Thank you.
That's okay. I'm calling from Taos Pueblo Reservation, and I just want to clarify for the two gentlemen that are on the air. I hope that they do this talk again, because I know how hard it is. I've been in the medical field for 18 years until I got hit and got injured pretty badly coming home from work. And therefore, I know how difficult it is to get help. And being on the Indian reservation is even worse. You have no idea how hard it is to even try to apply for this affordable care that's supposed to be available. It took me only a year and a half to get to qualify to get some help. And then it's taking me almost since March to get an appointment with a doctor. So I'm not sure what our problem is, but anyway, this administration, the Susana Martinez administration, I've called them before. I've called her also. I think there's just too much bureaucratic BS as far as I'm concerned. And knowing my way around the healthcare system and working in Albuquerque for a long time helped me to try to get this insurance, so-called insurance. But at the same time, I have not seen a physician yet.
Well, I hope that you, Gladys, I hope that
reservation transportation is very hard to get, and we don't have specialized care here in our area. We just have what I call Band-Aid care services.
Thank you for your call this morning, Gladys. I'm sorry to cut you off at this moment. We're running up against the end of the show. And Gladys was talking about bureaucracy and transportation and the things that we've been talking about all morning with the inability of people to get the care that they need under the current system that we have. I just want to ask one last question to each of you. Bill, you would say there's a way to fix the system? Dean, you would say we have to uproot it?
We have to change the system fundamentally.
Is there any way that you two meet in the middle? Or is there any way that you two see a possibility for your two perspectives to actually come together and resolve some of the issues that we've discussed this morning?
I mean, for me, the answer is unfortunately no. And I know Bill wants the same end point as I do. But the problem is that as long as the system rewards cutting costs, as in gatekeeping to keep people out of coverage, as long as the system rewards not spending money, that's called profit, the way it's currently structured, no, you can't make this system do what it should do, which is provide healthy provide care to get people to be healthy and stay healthy.
Bill Jordan, your last thoughts.
Well, unfortunately, Dr. Waldman and I don't have the luxury of creating the system that we want, and we do have a law that's been passed. It's the law of the land. It's been upheld by the Supreme Court. I do want to address one issue that we didn't cover, and that is that it's going to be pretty easy for New Mexico to pay for this expansion of Medicaid. The billions of dollars that are going to come into the state under the Affordable Care Act are taxed under existing tax law and will provide enough new state revenue for us to pay our share of that Medicaid expansion.
If you're interested in more information from New Mexico Voices for Children, we'll post a link to their website at KUNM.org. We'll also post a link to Dr. Dean Waldman's website with the information about your books.
Yes, Uproot U.S. Healthcare.
We'll post that information online at KUNM.org. Thank you both for joining us this morning. Bill Jordan is with New Mexico Voices for Children. Dean Waldman is a physician with the University of New Mexico here in Albuquerque. He is also affiliated with the Rio Grande Foundation. This has been the KUNM Call-In Show. Thanks to Roman Garcia for engineering this morning. Michael Hess provided production assistance, and Andy Lyman screened your calls today. If you have comments or suggestions about the show, you can email callinshow@kunm.org, and you can find audio of this program online at kunm.org in just a few minutes. Thanks for listening. I'm Elaine Baumgartel.